Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 124th episode of the Manor Podcast. I'm your co-host, Roger Bodie, joined as always with my best friend and other co-host, Michael Hamilton. Michael, your hair looks great.
Thank you.
Not as good as it did over the weekend. It still looks very good. I'm proud of you for any stylistic changes you make to working on your appearance. I'm all for.
Okay. I actually got a lot of comments on it over the weekend, and it made me feel really good. But honestly, your comment in the Discord was my favorite one.
Yeah. Michael becoming a Pro Tour champion, old news. Michael's hair looking great. That's the fire story from the weekend.
It made me laugh quite a bit. So I liked it.
I don't know when it was. I think 2016, 2017, for the longest time in my life. Like, I think up until that point, I spent 27 years of my life just having flat hair, just doing nothing with it all the time. And I started styling it little by little. And then eventually now, I don't even really need product in my hair. Like, it just kind of like is trained to just do the pompadour, the coif. Mm-hmm. So that's nice. Now I've messed up my hair.
Casey's sister is a hairstylist, and Casey's been suggesting very kindly that I go visit her for a while, and I was like, okay, I'll do it. I wanted to go before Worlds, but I was just busy.
I need a slide in Casey's DMs, not for the reason that you think.
Slide into her DMs. Go for it. You have her Discord.
I do. I need her to bully you into wearing blue jeans. If she starts telling you to wear blue jeans now, then you'll have the two-prong attack of Roger and Casey telling you to wear blue jeans and nice clothes.
I really don't like jeans. Like, actively hate jeans. But I'll wear like what's the level like below slacks above jeans?
Khakis?
Is that right?
I don't know.
I'll wear those. I'm just not wearing jeans. I hate jeans.
Fine. We'll go to Kohl's and get you some Kohl's khakis.
Okay. I'm down.
But believe it or not, this is not a style podcast. This is a card game podcast. And today's card game of choice is Flesh and Blood, despite you winning the Alpha Clash Pro Tour over the weekend. We'll touch on Alpha Clash at another time, but for right now, I'm kind of checked out of that game, admittedly, given I just don't have
time
for everything.
Yeah. If Alpha Clash had as good of an online client as the Bazaar, maybe we could rope you back in.
Maybe. I think I've decided I'm not even doing Atlanta. I was toying with the idea of going to Atlanta for the Magic the Gathering Grand Prix. I don't know what it's called. Whatever the Magic the Gathering thing was for there. But time, once again, being a critical resource of mine, and knowing that there are other events that I want to travel for later on in the month, like Memphis, and then there's events coming up in February, and just other life in general, work commitments. I just don't, because next week I'm traveling home to see my parents with the wife and the kid. So then that basically be like 2-3 weekends in a row traveling. So that just sounds like a bit much.
What weekend is Atlanta?
The first weekend of January.
Okay.
The third. Yeah. So I'd basically be traveling the week before Christmas. And then I guess that would be every other weekend. But still, every other weekend is still a lot to travel for me.
Yeah. It is a lot to travel, period. I think. But I don't know if I'm going to Atlanta either. I was partly interested because you talked about going to play Magic. And I'm like,
Ben's going. I think Ben's locked.
Like Wolfpack Ben or
no Ben or old Magic the Gathering Ben friend.
Okay, maybe I'll reach out to him. But I also hate trying to get cards together. So
I don't have any cards. That's the other big factor, and I'd have to. The deck that I wanted to buy would be like $300, which isn't the worst thing in the world. But
yeah, but like doubles your travel cost or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. Not talking about Magic today either.
Let's talk about some Flesh and Blood cards that came out. So some new Hunted spoilers for the expansion slot came out recently. Let's touch on a couple of those. Do you want to start with Retrace the Past?
Yeah, that's the new Katsu card, right?
Yeah, the 0 cost blue, block 3/2 power, Katsu spec. When it attacks, if it follows up a combo with Gust Wave. It gets +2 and can be named anything.
Yeah, and I heard there's going to specifically be a rules errata where you can name, or rules change, it's not an errata, where you can name cards that are not legal in the format. So you can name Bonds of Ancestry with this card by the time it comes out.
Yeah, and that'll be nice.
Turn on Dishonor. I think that a big issue Katsu has always had is that his blues aren't very good. Ancestral Harmony went a long way towards improving that, but it wasn't enough by itself. And this is just like another good blue for the Katsu deck. I think it makes Katsu reasonably better. I don't know if it means he is a CC power level hero, especially while Zen is still legal, but it is a good upgrade for him.
Yeah, and I think what's important though is that people are really focusing heavily on like the Bonds Dishonor line because it's inherently very powerful. And when Bonds of Ancestry was around, it was the only combo line that really made sense for him to be doing because it was so specific. But the cool thing about this card is that it opens up any combo line again for him, right? Like, because you still have the 1 for 3. It's not, is it Descending Gust Wave? No, that's what this card's called. No, this is called Retrace the Past.
Descending Gust Wave is right. That's the one.
Okay.
The 1 for 3 with Go Again.
Yeah. So that still has Go Again regardless, no matter what you do. And then you can follow this up and then you can go into like anything. The Crane Dance, if it's where it gets the plus power equal to the number of chain links you control. You could Find Center, you could Break Tide, you could Heron's Flight, like all of the Force of Flood, like all of these weird niche cards that used to have like not that much use.
They're all on the table.
Especially, and like I forgot about Katsu's other spec, Lord of Wind. So you could even call this Mugenshi release.
Yeah.
And then yeah, Lord of Wind. That's kind of sick.
Lord of Wind has always been like pretty strong. You just needed very specific cards. But Lord of Wind's being a blue block 3 as well, you're getting a lot of power out of your blues if you play this and you no longer have to play Mugenshi release.
So yeah, this card's really cool. We'll see if it opens up a lot of new cool things for Katsu to do, but definitely they promised some support for Katsu, that they weren't going to leave him high and dry after the Auto War banning. And I think this goes a good way to like at least making him relevant again, definitely more than Gust Wave of the Second Wave did.
Yeah. I still think that card will probably be in the deck. It's just like not significantly shifting his power level. It's just like a tiny, like it's slightly better than a side grade, I think.
Yeah. Cause before they were running Fluster Fist, so now instead of Fluster Fist you just get to run Gust Wave the Second Wind.
Yeah. So I think definitely an improvement for Katsu, not a huge improvement. The Gust Wave was not a huge improvement. This one might be a little bit bigger. Katsu's never been my specialty. I actually when I first started playing, I played Katsu into your combo bowl, and I was like, I'm good with Katsu for the rest of my life basically after getting comboed and being dead over and over again. So we'll see. Be happy to see what all the Katsu players come up with and see if he becomes a real threat again.
Yeah. Then we have the Enchanted Quiver that gives Rangers the quiver that prevents arcane damage, 1 arcane damage at any time, and 2 if there's a face-up card in their arsenal.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a great card for Rangers. Riptide specifically really, really, really struggles into arcane damage. I think he's still going to really, really, really struggle into heroes that can do arcane damage, but he's slightly better into them, which is great. Azalea also, I think Crow's Nest, you usually don't get a full point of value out of Crow's Nest in most matchups. Occasionally you hit an Infecting Shot with an extra resource and you give it +1, or a Murkmire with an extra resource, but getting this consistent 1-2 value out of it and also making your Kano matchup significantly better by having Spell Void, it'll be nice. It's a nice upgrade.
For sure. Speaking of arcane damage, there's Ring of Roses, and I was super excited for this card when I first read it because I missed the word legendary on it. I thought it was just a Verdant specialization, so you could run 3 of it, but it's a yellow 3 block, non-attack action aura, legendary Verdant spec. And the first time you deal arcane damage each turn, gain 1 life. So you could get a lot of value out of over the course of the game if you see this early.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of Frost Hex from Icelander. The fact that it's not blue means it is, it's less good when you don't want it. But the fact that it costs 0 instead of costing 3 means when you draw it, you'll almost always want it unless the game's basically over. So I think it is a nice upgrade. If you could play 3 copies, it would be almost certainly an upgrade. You could like build your whole deck around it, playing things like Fiendel's Fighting Spirit and just getting your little pings in, and then suddenly your final Aspiring Spirit attacks, you gain a life, you ping them for a life, and if they don't AB that one, they're going to take, you're going to get two more value, so it's like a three point of value ping, which is pretty crazy. That would mean Finals is getting 11 value. I love Finals Fighting Spirits.
Yeah.
The fact that it's a one of only means I don't know how strongly you can build your Verdant's list around it. It's hard to find this card. There's not really a good way to tutor it from your deck. Earth doesn't really have access to that. So we'll see if this is enough to really push Verdant's up. I think that Enigma, being as close to Living Legend as she is, also might do some things to help Verdant's out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that'll do a lot to help a lot of heroes out, but
yeah. Assuming, like, even ignoring the heroes that have like 20-25% at best matchups into Enigma, just like 15 or 10-20% of the field at most tournaments is Enigma, and all those are gonna have to play something else too. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Speaking of Enigma, she got some more hate in this set with Warcry of Bellona that came out yesterday with the zero cost 3-power yellow light warrior attack reaction, and target Raiden gets +2 this turn, and you can, as an instant, it has the hand trap ability, basically, where you can discard it and banish X cards from your soul. If you do, the next time a target weapon deals X or less damage to you this turn, prevent that damage and basically redirect it, and that damage can't be prevented by them at that point. So if they attack you with a spectral shield for one, you can banish a card out of your soul, and then you kill all their wards and deal one damage to them. It's like the dream of this card.
Yeah, it's interesting because most of the time Enigma is winning in games, it's not by building like a huge board that you can't beat. It's usually like a little bit of a board that's like each turn, and then you like have to take all the damage to clear the board, and then you're just like dying because you can't block. So your hand, if your card blocks 3 or attacks for 2, you usually have to attack for 2 with it, because Enigma has this board that's worth a lot if it stays in play. And that's where Enigma gets like a lot of extra value that's not like as obvious on its face. It's not usually like you keep 5 auras in play for 5 turns. Like, the game was over a long time ago if you keep it in play for like 1 extra turn. So
for sure,
I don't think this card alone tips the scale a lot, though it is probably going to be a pretty good in some spots. And I think the biggest use case for this is if Enigma attacks you with Mirror Guy and you can like block with 2-3 blocks and then use this card to prevent the next 2 and just kill the Mirror Guy, she loses the 4 defense that you usually get out of it. You expect to get 8 on offense, 4 on defense, and occasionally your opponent can't kill it, and that's even better, and she'll lose that. It's also noteworthy, I believe, if she attacks with an aura with a +1 counter on it, she's going to lose her action point when you kill it. Because I don't actually know. We'll have to wait for the rules.
Why does a +1 counter matter?
That's what gives it go again.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't have go again if it didn't have a counter. But yeah. I think you break the ward in the damage resolution step, which should happen before the go again check happens, which means the attack should be destroyed and should close the chain without generating an
action. Yeah, because I think go again happens on resolution. So I think that sounds right.
But I'm going to let the judges explain that one. I'm sure it'll be in the release notes for the card. And if that's the case, then it's really, really annoying for Enigma to plan out some of your turns. We're like, you might even start the turn with a shield with the counter on it and want to play a Phantasmaclasm. And like, suddenly there's a real consideration to just not attacking with a shield, because if one has this card and 2 cards in soul, then your shield gets blown up and you can't spend your other 2 cards.
Is that big of a deal?
It is if you have like, even if you don't have an arsenal, you're intellect penaltying a full card. If you do have an arsenal already on top of the Phantasmaclasm, then you're going to be intellect penaltying 2 cards by attacking with a shield. And the risk-reward math is kind of weird there. We're like...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Pretty rough. Yeah. If you can't use your cards.
But if you have... What are the face-down arms that can give something +1?
Uphold Tradition.
If you have an Uphold Tradition or a Grain That Tips the Scale or an Astral Etchings, and I only banish 1 card out of my soul to prevent your one little spectral shield token, and you then pump it to 2, it has the fail condition of or less damage, my card does nothing and you just deal your damage.
Yep.
That's really rough.
On the other side of things too, if I attack with a Mirror Guy for 8, you block 6, you use the thing for 2, I could also just play a Restless and take some number of counters off Mirror Guy. As long as it's doing less than 6 damage now, then or six or less damage, then it's, your thing won't prevent any damage because your cards that block were stopping the damage first, so no damage was leaking over. So there is definitely some counterplay on the Enigma side. This is a card that, like, when I'm playing Enigma, I'm going to be really annoyed that I have to figure out how to sequence around this and play around it, and it's like, maybe annoyed is not the wrong word. It's going to be challenging, I feel like. But I also feel like the Bolton players aren't very happy about this card either.
Some people are. I think I'm a little doomer on it just because of the fail condition and it being so niche. I think, especially when I first saw it, I was pretty unhappy. But the more time I thought about, like, thinking about it, where I've even made this argument for other and most expansion slot cards, where the goal isn't to just print something broken that pushes a hero into tier one. The goal is to give them nice pieces of appropriately power level cards to give them some extra tools in their toolkit to, you know, make them like maybe a half letter grade better at best or something like that. I think like that's kind of the sweet spot they want these expansion slot cards to be.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that this card does fill that role. And it's just hard. Like, obviously, I really love Bolton. I have a gold foil Raiden sitting in my binder, and I am very excited to play Bolton at the time that he's good. But I still think this card doesn't solve some of the core issues with his game plan at the same time. Because I think the thing I was saying the most with this card is he doesn't need tech pieces or payoffs or things like this to like push him over the edge. I have to put 30 charge cards in my decks and three of them are good.
Which ones are good?
Via the Vanguard.
Oh yeah, that one is pretty good. Okay.
Yeah. And the rest are just so mopey and terrible. And it's like, okay. Well. Yeah.
I kind of like Express Lightning, the old Wounding Blow.
Yeah, yeah. When your next best option is don't do the thing and just have Wounding Blow, like it's
I think love it's Wounding Blow. That card's sick.
Says a lot about the state of the charge cards, I think.
Yeah, makes sense.
But you know who did get a super crazy powerful card that is going to push them a whole letter grade up, probably?
Who?
Vincent.
Oh, yes, yes.
There's Call, which is the 0/3 Shadow Runeblade action at red. You may play it from your banish zone. If a hero has lost life this turn, you may play it as over an instant, and each hero banishes a card from their hand as Blood Death.
Yeah.
This card's cracked.
This card is very good. It has some pretty cool play patterns where, like, a lot of the time to double Runegate, you'd banish a Runegate card, and then next turn you'd banish another Runegate card. But this, like, kind of lets you banish this, and then you can double regain the next turn by using this to banish one of the other ones. I also think that a very common play pattern for Vincent is block with two or three cards, play a Runegate attack, pass. You don't have an action point anymore. And this actually plays really well into that pattern where you can block with two or three cards, banish this, and play it, which is great against the aggro decks. You're like giving them disruption, and some turns you just won't have enough rune chance to rune gate something, and you could just do this instead and have that one rune chant. And it's basically like the turns where Icelander would block with three cards and activate Coronet Peak. This is kind of similar vibes to that.
Yeah, 100%.
You get a rune chant.
Yeah. And what's nice about this is that it does have Blood Debt, so you would pay life for this line. But this also has like the Amulet of Ice effect where you can build up. You don't have to use this the first card turn cycle you play it. Like, you can pay 2 to 3 life to really time it to what, like, so even if you are just doing that thing where you kind of block with two cards, let's say you play like a Read the Runes, Banish Call or something like that, you don't have to play the call that turn, especially if you're playing Read the Runes, because that doesn't have go again. You can wait for your hand that like really pushes a lot of damage and then call after paying life on the start of your turn, banish your extra card and like push damage, which helps a lot in like fatigue decks in particular.
Yeah, makes sense. One other aspect of this card that I think is quite powerful, especially against fatigue decks, but just in general, is this it's a Shadow Runeblade action, so it triggers Vincent's hero ability where you can use it to pay life for your other effects that care about if you've paid life this turn or not. It also has that you play as an instant if a player has lost life this turn, which means it combos really well with the Eulogy tokens.
Yeah.
To generate action points in against fatigue decks especially. So you can like be playing these and generate action points while you're stripping your opponent's hand and banishing your own Runegate cards. And I am far from a Vincent expert, but Vincent, I played a lot against Mar Vincent at Portland and got some good games in. And Vincent seemed like a real contender. I've also played against another Vincent in Swiss in like mid of day two at X and two, and the game was extremely close. I barely got it. And I think that Vincent has legs right now, and this card is, it just seems like a great tool for her.
Yeah, 100%. And it's also leaning further into the disruptive element of Runeblade now. So between this and Succumb to Temptation, that's just building up more and more effects that are like messing with your opponent's game plans, interacting with them more than just being a proactive deal a bunch of damage necessarily game plan.
Yeah, which is really cool. I think that I definitely prefer when the game has more interaction going on and it's not just like who throws number, the biggest number. Living Legend. That's why. We'll get there. We'll get there. That's not all that is, format is, but.
Yeah. Okay. And then last but not least, this one just came out a few minutes ago. Thick Hide Hunter, Brute, Yellow, 6 power, of course. Cost 2. When this attacks or defends, discard a random card. Oh, this card seems real bad. Oh, wait, it has a 6 in the lower right-hand corner, too. It also blocks for 6.
That's a lot of block value. So
yeah.
I think this card's actually very interesting. It obviously has like some good play against Dominate and Overpower, which Brute really struggles with sometimes because you don't really want to put D-Reacts in your KO deck. But I think that it's another yellow 6 power. It blocks 6. It can let you block with your pearls. If you have like 2 pearls in this card, you can block 6 and discard one of your pearls and arsenal the other one, which is kind of cool. I also think that if you like chain end on this card, it's a 2 for 6, which is fine. It says Brute on it, which is great. And being a yellow matters a lot in Brute, where a lot of their cards cost 2 and they can play a lot of their resource curve off 2 resources. Well, we'll really see how this card ends up. I don't know very much about Reinar or Levaya, honestly. I've played a decent amount of KO, and this seems like a card that might be good enough for KO, might not, depending on like what the meta looks like, how much Dominate and Overpower is running around. But
yeah, you touched on what the most important element of this card, where Brute for a long time had the templating as an additional cost to attack or as an additional cost to defend. No additional cost here. It's just if it does the thing, discard a card. So like you said, if it's your last card you're attacking with on a turn cycle, no downside. Or if it's the last card you're blocking with on a turn cycle, like you were looking to arsenal this card, because I think it's a fine arsenal for that reason. You just get 6 value a block out of it as well. So yeah. I think it's, once again, not gonna crazy push Brutes into tier 1 dominating the metagame, but it is a nice upgrade and a tool in their toolkit. So looks pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's a cool card. I like this design.
Yeah. So what I will also be interested to see if they continue that happened in last set, which was Briar got support in Rosetta. So I wonder if any other Living Legend heroes will get some support in the set as well.
Yeah, I think that was kind of surprising. I guess they just want Briar to be a real threat in Living Legend. Maybe they feel bad about having to errata her, and she kind of like is weaker than what her true form would be without the, or her original form would have been without the errata. But she's the first time, I think. I guess we saw some for Dromai, but I think that was partly because Dromai like surprised Living Legend.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of like where they could push something like ridiculous, like make a specialization or a very specific class talent combination that like works well in the Living Legends kit in particular, or only works well with like their hero ability. I think like that'd be a cool way to like shake up the Living Legend metagame, because as we're about to talk about Living Legend, I think the format's kind of consolidating again. Would you say that?
I think that the Battle Harden that we played in a few months ago kind of felt like it was in that direction. I think the top 8 was 7 aggro decks in your Starvo deck.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it did feel like it was consolidating. But the aggro decks were fairly diverse. We had some chains. We had an Aurora. We had some 2 Viscerize and Zen, of course. I think there were 2 or 3 Zens, and the Zen ultimately took it down.
Yeah. But if we look to the skirmish season that's been happening, I believe week one, Starro had the most wins, and then now week two, Viscerai had the most wins.
Yeah, but I also think that the skirmish season data looked pretty healthy too. Like Dromai was up there in week two. I should actually just pull it up and look at it so I'm not spouting some nonsense. But
yeah, I have week two up in front of me. Week two was Viscerai with 8, Dromai with 7, Starro with 7, Zenit 4, Briar with 4, and then everything else.
Yeah, that doesn't sound... I mean, that sounds pretty good to me for...
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I thought Starro's dominance was higher than it was, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I know week one, he was the most winning hero. But even then, it was Starro with 9, Zen with 8, Viscerai with 5, Aurora with 3, Briar with 3, Oldheim with 3, Prism with 3, and then everybody else.
Yeah, and I think taking that with the Battle Hardened data, I don't think Starro looks out of line, though I guess the Battle Hardened was pre-Jarl. Which yeah. is definitely a nice buff to Starro.
And I think Starro lists, in particular mine in the Battle Harden and the list we were seeing in Osaka, like he had just such a massive dump of cards into his card pool. It took a long time to like really tune out and smooth out lists. And I think that's getting solved more and more as we're heading into Chicago.
Yeah, Felling, Plow Under, Somersault are all big, and then all the new Jarl stuff on top of that now, where you get these new ice block threes if you want them, you get some of Jarl's equipment if you want it. It's definitely interesting, and I don't think there's an obvious build for Starro right now.
For sure. But you pivoted onto Starro off of Viscerai for Chicago, right?
I'm pretty sure I'm playing Starro. If I show up in Chicago playing something else, don't get mad at me. But right now I believe I am playing Starro. I basically, the Viscerai deck does crazy broken things. Like there was one turn you played Hypothermia against me and my hand presented like 30 damage after that, which is like, that's just stupid. And
I was very sad.
Viscerai, like I said, he does do very, very broken things. I think the deck has a lot of power in it, but one thing that it was missing that something I care a lot about is consistency. I felt like some games I did 30 damage. Some games I drew hands that like were happy to present 8. It's like 4-card 8, come on. And the deck, the way I built the deck with like belittles and minnowisms, I kind of filled the deck with a bunch of 2 blocks. And I think that significantly increased the power of the deck. But now when your hand is really, really bad, you're blocking 2 instead of blocking 3, which is rough. That's wrong.
Yeah.
Though blocking 3 with a bunch of cards probably wasn't getting you there in the aggro mirrors if you drew bad, but it makes it harder in like Starro when they're disrupting you as well. And ultimately, well, I think that deck isn't bad and I think it's very powerful. It's just not what I want to be doing. And I couldn't figure out how to make it feel consistent enough for my taste.
That's fair. So instead, you're just going to hope to do the crayons, draw your rainbow every turn with good old Starro. That kind of consistency.
Yeah, I've had I think the variance in value between Starro and non-Starro hands is like 2 or 3 points usually, assuming you're able to block with your extra cards and you're playing cards that block well, block lots of 3 blocks, which, you know, if I'm building a deck, it's gonna have a lot of 3 blocks in it if I can. I want to try to make the Starro deck as consistent as possible and like be able to like get value out of his hands when it's not fusing. I think that was a direction a lot of people went where they were just like trying to maximize their fusion odds and just fuse as often as possible. And that's not the direction I'm looking. I just want to make sure that my hands, when I don't fuse, still play.
Yeah, that was never the direction you took Starro. And if we look all the way back to your calling Starro list, that was the whole thesis behind the more controlling element of Starro, which was don't just try to play the slot machine, or I think that's what it was called, slot machine Starro.
Casino
Starro. Play this more mid-rangey, value-oriented Starro, and to just play towards the late game where you'll know you'll just do the thing every turn.
Yeah, and I think making a Starro deck that doesn't rely on revealing the crayons, as we're now calling them, every turn, it lets you change a lot of things about your deck building. You don't need to activate Crown every turn, which means that you get a place to Lagmite instead of Rampart because you're not activating Crown most turns, so you can... get to play Slagmite, which is a very, very, very good card. And when you're playing Casino and Slagmite, a lot of, if you pitch up blue to activate Crown your opponent's turn, you just like waste two resources, which is pretty bad. Even if you have Rampart, you're still only getting two value out of pitching your blue. But if you hit your Starvo trigger, now your hand's like probably like plus five compared to what it was because you had so many stupid two block elemental cards that don't do anything. So yeah, that's always the way I prefer to play Starvo. I think that it's not inherently more powerful, but it's much more consistent. And like I said, I didn't move away from Viscerai because it wasn't powerful. I moved away because I didn't like the lack of consistency.
Yeah. So do you want to talk about any of like your deck building iterations, or are you still working out a lot of those? Like, do you have any like theories you want to share or no?
I think Falling of the Crown is a really, really strong card, and I'm probably going to be playing it, but it's awkward because when you reveal the crayons, you reveal lightning, ice, earth, and you have a blue lightning card and a blue ice card and this Falling of the Crown, your hand doesn't really play very well. You kind of need another attack to play first, and then you can play Falling afterwards, or you need the ice card to be something that you can play. So I've been trying Winner's Bites in that ice slot, so you can like play Winner's Bite and then play the Falling, and that's a great 3-card 10 that takes 2 cards from your opponent. That's sounds like a good deal to me.
But yeah,
other than that, I don't really know what else I'm looking to do.
If your lightning card is Electrostatic Magnetism, you can play Electrostatic Somersault. You can play the Felling and then target it with the Somersault. And then when the chain link resolves, you'll have your Felling to Arsenal, which is nice.
That's true. That is another good blue that works on 3-card Felling hands. So
yeah.
And Felling's one of the best cards. So casting Felling multiple times is great.
Yeah. I was really dubious on Felling at first just because I was worried about the density of earth cards. And before it's turned on, like before you have the 4-card in banish, it can, it's not a very particularly powerful card even with Starvo's activation.
Yeah.
So I just thought all that would lead to it not, the juice wouldn't be worth the squeeze. But what I found in particular in closing games, in late games, Felling is just an all-star where you're kind of blocking more and it gives Starvo access to better 2-card hands, which I think he was kind of lacking before. Yeah. Where like a lot of the time, if you block with 2 cards, like your best thing would be like attack with like red Autumn's Touch or red Fruits of the Forest, which is like not really game winning.
I think the true best 2-card hand is Swing Winner's Roll and Arsenal.
Sure.
Other than Felling. Felling's great though.
But yeah, having access to some really good 2-card hands that like still do some disruption and push damage is nice. So I've liked it. It's just like now it's figuring out how do you have enough earth cards to support Felling while having enough elemental cards to still be able to reasonably activate Starvo without putting your deck with a million 2 blocks while still having a cohesive game plan. It's just a lot of deck building hoops to jump through.
Yeah, my current thesis is you just like play a low lightning count because like there's the lightning 3 blocks, which are good. Current funnel is a huge upgrade, just getting another lightning 3 block. And then you talked about Somersault being good. I honestly was playing games this morning without Somersault in my deck, and I think that's probably not correct, but I wanted to try it.
I think blues are at least an auto include at this point. I think I might be off yellows at this point, but even then, I don't know, the card just is really good, but we'll see. Yeah.
It gets weird when you're building your deck. You're not really maximizing it with your deck. I was playing all the like the ice auras that block 3 because I just want the 3-block ice cards. And then I talked about playing Winner's Bites, which also you can't target with Somersault. So you have to make sure you have enough targets for it. But I also had 2 hands in a row where I didn't draw an attack action. So I think I went too far in the other direction.
Yeah. Because I do get the good value proposition of like being able to block really efficiently. But at the end of the day, I think being a good blocking deck
it's not good enough in Living Legend.
Not good enough for the Living Legend format because your opponent's turns can be just so over the top. And if you're just like, ooh, I can get 12 block value out of your hand and your opponent's sending 35 damage at you, it's still a losing game state.
I don't think I will be super sold on what answer I bring to Chicago. I was at the Alpha Clash Pro Tour last weekend and I spent most of my time testing for that. And I was really hoping to just play whatever I played at the Battle Hardened and, or is it Battle Hardened Cincinnati? Columbus. I was really planning to play whatever I played at that at Chicago, but ultimately I don't enjoy the Viscera deck, and it's more important I'm having fun and learning things. And we had Michael Fung on earlier, and he's like, every tournament is a learning opportunity for the next one. And that's how I'm looking at Chicago now. I'm going to bring a pile of Starvo cards that I think are at least reasonable and expect to learn a few things and probably have some tweaks and optimizations from there.
Yeah. And I think a deck that was on a lot of people's radar for a minute, but I think, I don't know how represented it will be, is Oldheim, like the Count Your Blessings Oldheim deck. I saw some buzz about it for a minute, but I just don't know how that deck just doesn't lose to the clock. Like, how are you expecting to play over the course of like 15, 16 rounds or however many it is in Swiss and not draw at least two of those, let alone lose?
Yeah, I think that the hammer for four does kill pretty quickly once your opponent's running out of threats. You just hit them for four, then you start sending your blue eights if they actually run out. So I think that time is a big concern, but it's not like, I don't think it's insurmountable. The problem that I have with that deck is like, what if the Runeblades just start attacking their Duskblades? Like,
yeah, that too.
You're just in big trouble. I think that Zen is a deck that is vulnerable to fatigue, but if Fi is good enough, you also probably can't fatigue Fi consistently between Shuko, Searing Emberblade, and the Phoenix Flames. And I'm not sure that you're even favored in the Guardian Mirrors. If they have like one or two Evergreens, then
you are. I think one or two Evergreens isn't enough. Okay. I think if you just expect to play into an old time as Starbo and be like, I have a red or like one or two red Evergreens, I think you're solidly unfavored in that matchup.
That's interesting. That doesn't match my expectations, but
it didn't match my expectations either. I think it's just the problem is that like in end games, even if you're attacking with red Evergreen, they just have four innate defense between Rampart, Crown, Earthreact. Mm-hmm. So you're not actually pushing that much damage in endgames to like reasonably like close it out if like you're behind or game's close.
And every time they send their hammer, it's four true damage to your deck or whatever.
Yeah. And you don't have your crown, but yeah, but like then you're spending a whole card for one, and then like that's also not like, and then you also have to worry about like the Frostbite, which can for a deck that plays ice, Starvo does not like having Frostbites. I'll tell you that much.
Who does like having Frostbites, honestly?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Frostbites are pretty good.
Yeah. So we'll see. But I think I said this on the last one. Whenever I talked about Living Legend on the Living Legend Laryngitis Legend episode or whatever, when I play Pat, I think I 100% lose to Pat if I don't have exposed the elements on Crown of Seeds.
Okay. That's fair. I wonder if Expose is good enough in the Starvo Mirror, because I know at the tournament that I won with Starvo, I don't remember if I had one or had zero. I was going back and forth for quite a while. And I remember very vividly one game of Swiss. I'm like, maybe Rampart's actually better than Stalagmite. And I presented Rampart in the Starvo Mirror, and my opponent immediately exposed the elements to me. And I'm like, that was Ed Knight.
You had one exposed the elements in your Starvo list.
Yeah, maybe I'll run back the one copy.
I have one copy.
Really shore up that fatigue matchup.
Yeah. And what's nice also is that like even if like they're playing around the resource with the blue to blow up Crown, if you just even putting a minus one counter on Rampart goes a really long way, and they can't really do anything about that.
Yeah, makes sense.
And as far as playing Expose the Elements into the Starvo Mirror, I haven't tried it, but my perspective at the moment is that it's not really what the game's about. I think the Starvo Mirror is more just a straight value proposition turn over turn as like who's best maximizing like their 4 or 5 card hands. And as long as you are able to like really efficiently block or attack turn over turn, that's just kind of like the game just kind of naturally concludes pretty cleanly. And if you're spending time to like fiddle around and expose the elements for blowing up a crown, which isn't really even that critical, because even as you were saying, if you're playing Stalagmite, not Rampart in that matchup, then you're not even crowning all that often anyways.
Yeah, it's you're just like tunic crowning every third turn.
Or yeah, which is turn, whatever. Like, it's not that big.
And the cost of expose is still 2 resources and a card, which is a pretty big cost, and you still need to have the double fuse for that to even work. So it can like really brick some hands.
And you're putting an instant no block in your deck, which is also
I don't know anyone matchup. That would not want instant no blocks in their deck, you know.
Yeah, just put a million of them. Yeah, as we also talked about Somersault and the Awakenings and things like that. But speaking of Awakening, you still don't like that card, huh?
I don't.
As terms of like a power level, you just don't think it's good. People don't like that card because they think it's too good, and you're like, meh, it's whatever still.
Yeah, I think right now my current thought process is any matchup where I'm very likely to be behind early on and it's not going to go to second cycle, I'll probably play the copy in my sideboard and board it in those spots. So I'm thinking against Zen and Aurora, that's probably good enough. Fi, Aggro Viscerai, if I know it's an aggressive deck and not trying to just like set up Rune Chance on me. Even Chain, I was playing against Chain, and I'm just like, they're just trying to build up their shackles and have their big turns, and you don't really fall behind in the early game against Chain. It's pretty awkward there. And then the mirror, you do fall behind a lot in the mirror. But the problem is the games go really, really long and you're probably getting the second cycle, and like having a good pitch stack second cycle can very easily win you the mirror, and Awakening messes that up.
But if you have a really bad pitch stack, I've had those games too, where it's like, oh man, my pitch stack is a dumpster fire. And thankfully Awakening just lets you shuffle it, and then you just get a nice little reset button.
Yeah, but I think because you're able to influence your pitch stack, there are going to be games where you draw like 8 earth cards, then like 5 lightning cards, then like 5 ice cards or whatever, and your pitch stack just like there's no way to make it functional. But you're probably losing those games in game one anyway, even if you get the shuffle, and or you're probably falling way behind in cycle one anyway, even if you get the shuffle. And because you have so much influence over what your pitch stack looks like, especially with Crown of Seeds, I really am not convinced I want Awakening in the mirror, and I probably won't be. Even if I register Awakening, I'm almost certainly going to be boarding out, at least for my early rounds of Starbo mirrors and Chicago.
That's fair. Yeah, I still like it quite a bit. I don't think it's broken or anything. I know I'm not like oh my god, I can't believe Awakening is in this format and the one of makes games feel stupid. Like, there are some games where like you're super behind and then it like brings you back into it, but there's never a game that like, oh well, we're in it, or like you're winning it, Awakening happens, and the game's just over. At least not that I've seen in my experience. Like, it's not just like a I win the game card that some people make it out to be. It just makes games that you're behind in more reasonable, which is a fine place to be, especially as a one of.
Yeah. I haven't played a ton of Starbo in LL still, but my experience a lot in Indianapolis was I'd be ahead, they'd draw an Awakening, it'd be pretty good. Then I'd be a little bit behind, but we'd have a pretty close game. And then they draw another Awakening, and then it just like makes their hand go like -4 because you have an instant no block that you can't get any value out of.
And
then,
yeah, and that doesn't happen anymore.
Sure. So if you're just behind the whole time, Awakening is great.
Yeah. And I would say, I think the other awkward thing that could happen with Awakening, especially with these Starbo configurations as they're built, is like, you can run out of like good Awakening targets, especially like if you have to block with a Pulverize or you're attack with it on a different turn cycle, or like you really only have Pulverize and Crippling Crush that are like solidly, consistently like super snapback powerful effects to like bring you back. And if those aren't available to you, like your next back action is Oakenold if you are keeping cards to fuse it after you are doing your Awakening thing, which is dubious. And then Spinal Crush, which is like whatever.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think that only getting one Crippling Crush does hurt.
Yeah. And you can play multiple Pulverizes into your deck, I guess, but then it's like, yeah, multiple Pulverizes in your deck.
You never want to draw Pulverize, so.
I wouldn't say never. I think I've definitely hard cast a fair number of Pulverizes, okay. But
I never want to draw pulverize.
Yeah. When you're ahead and you have like your 5-card hand, if you have a pulverize, it's fine.
Sure, sure. Tunic and 4 cards and you draw the pulverize 3 blue is great, especially if they're the crayons.
Yeah, yeah. But we'll see.
Yeah. You can also Awakening for Starstruck in some matchups too. Starstruck's unrestricted now. You can play as many as you want.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I was thinking specifically in the mirror where I think Awakening, I've definitely played it the most because against the aggro decks, like you can just take the damage and then like do the thing, but it's really, I feel like a gamble proposition if you really go all in on Awakening for that line, because if your next hand isn't disruptive or like powerful and their next hand is, then like, sure, you won that turn cycle, but if they're still able to outvalue from there, it still is a losing game state overall. So I don't know.
Yeah, but like, what's the alternative in that spot? The 2 cards that you use to cast Awakening, they could just be like 2-3 blocks and then you'd have 6 more life. But
yeah,
if you send like a Crippling Crush with those 2 cards or a Pulverize, it's going to give you almost as much while presenting a bunch of damage.
Yeah. Oh, well. But I guess we'll see. But that's kind of like the shape of LL. It's funny how much chain has fallen off in the format, I think. I think there is still some chain aficionados out there, but I really think Viscerai has kind of stolen the show as like the Runeblade to be on everybody's radar at this point.
Yeah, I think it's especially tough for chain because I think chain is unfavored into both Zen and Viscerai, and those are the popular aggro decks. And
yeah, and you're like favored into Starvo, but I don't think it's by much, and games can still kind of go sideways on you sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Husk gives you a lot of equity in a Starvo that the other aggro decks don't have. But yeah, it's definitely not free by any means.
For sure. But what's interesting is that Call, that card we started the show with, and Chain will get access to that card as well, since it's just a Shadow Runeblade card. It's not a Vincent spec. So he could be calling some people in the near future.
Yeah, that's actually really powerful. I didn't even think about that. Mm-hmm. That's not legal for Chicago, but.
No, soon. Next big LL event, maybe we'll be calling some chains.
Yeah.
Okay. Any final thoughts on Living Legend before we wrap things up then?
No, I guess my final thought is the format played really well when I was testing for the Battle Hardened and playing the Battle Hardened. It's just like there's a lot of, in my opinion, there's a lot of different decks that seem reasonable and are worth exploring. And I'm excited to see what people bring to Chicago. I think it wouldn't surprise me if there's some rogue contenders that show up and do really well.
Yeah. Something like an Acilia or something like that, that people just haven't figured out. Yeah. And for as much as people are still dooming on Kano, I still think he's good.
He's definitely worse than he would be if he had all of his.
Yeah, of course. He's not inherently broken. Yeah, that's not. But like, he's still good.
Yeah, there will probably be a Shock Charmers in my deck.
Yeah, 100%. I think you're punting if you don't have Shock Charmers in your Starvo. But for another time. Okay. Well, with that being said, the next time you're battling in the Living Legend format, always remember, mind your manners. Thanks for watching.